Dan Bickley here, and nothing much better for Valley sports fans than eliminating a team from L.A. or San Francisco. Can the Diamondbacks drive a stake in the heart of the Giants? We'll tell you all about it starting at 6 on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
All right, this is the C-plus version of the play.
Berkovici sets, loads up, heaving one deep, and it is caught!
Is the A plus version of the call.
Here we go. 7 seconds. Berkovici. He's just going to air it out deep downfield and no white shirts around.
Oh, Jalen Strong! Caught for a touchdown! Jalen Strong makes the catch for the touchdown, and the Sun Devils have won the game on a Hail Mary on the final play!
He throws it. There's nobody there.
Oh my God, I didn't see that guy! There was a guy in a white shirt. I didn't see him!
It's like,
there was a guy right there.
Tim, open your eyes.
How did I miss it?
Open your eyes. Come on.
Yeah. First of all, I was shocked to know that that was 9 years ago.
Yeah.
I would not have thought that that was nine. That was 9 years ago?
I would have guessed 7 or 8, but yeah, I mean, I think I would have guessed 7. I mean, I don't remember the year, but yeah.
Mitch, were you in school then?
That was my freshman year.
That was your freshman year.
Can I tell a quick story about that game?
Sure, yeah, please sure, do. Please.
So I'm staying in my freshman dorms, wherever they were, and we go hang out in this community area. I think it was like Vista del Sol or something. So they have a common area, and they have a television, some couches. So we're all watching the game. And I remember at one point, ASU got down 2 touchdowns. Like, USC just ripped another run up the middle for a touchdown. And I'm thinking, it's over. So we all get up, we leave. And then a few minutes later, I'm hearing everybody screaming. They're like, we won! We won! And I'm like, huh?
How? So were you not in the band? Were you not in the band then?
I never witnessed it live.
You were not in the band at that time?
Well, it was a road game, so I didn't get to go.
Oh, that's right. It's a road game. That's right. So you weren't... Yeah.
I thought I put in there. It was 2014.
No, you did. You did. We were just talking
9 years ago.
We were just talking before the show about it. Not that it seems like it was yesterday, because it doesn't, but it doesn't seem like it was 9 years ago.
I mean, the other important thing about that win is it helped propel them into, what, the top 10 at that point? They got all the way up to 6 that year.
Yeah, I believe so.
I think the thing that stood out to me the most, and this is a terrific article you guys worked on, and since 2011, ASU was 5-7 against USC. And I kind of think, okay, we're not going to miss them because, you know, a lot of times you get your ass kicked by them. But you're 5-7, that's not bad. But some of the most remarkable things have happened in this series. And that was one of them right there. That was one of them. The other one is Lane Kiffin getting fired on the tarmac after losing to ASU.
Damn right.
Right? 2013, yep. ASU beats him 62-41. Marion Grice had 4 touchdowns. ASU was actually losing at halftime. Took over the game. Taylor Kelly racked up 612 yards of offense. Lane Kiffin gets fired. Hours later, they got beat by ASU. Fired on the tarmac at the airport.
Yeah.
That's another one. There was a third one, too. I can't remember which one it was, but there was a... So it's just a lot of great moments. Oh, the 19-game winning streak. USC had a 19-game home winning streak that ASU beat them in and ended that winning streak.
That was Herm Edwards' first year back in 2018. That was N'Keal Harry, a 92-yard punt return for a touchdown. That was Eno Benjamin rushing for 192 and 2 touchdowns. That ended the Trojans. Yeah, 19-game home winning streak. ASU won at the Coliseum for just the second time in their last 10 trips there. Now, the reason, and Mitch deserves a lot of the credit for this because he sent me the link to this, and I just, this morning for about 45 minutes, just took a deep dive into kind of the history of ASU and USC. Now, look, this Saturday's game, our expectations are next to nothing for it. USC is going to come in here, and it's going to get messy. It's going to be really, really messy, probably Saturday night, because they've got the week off. They've got the Heisman Trophy winner, and ASU, their quarterback situation is a mess, and their roster is a mess right now. This is also the start of the final tour, the beginning of the end, if you will, for ASU and their run through the Pac-12.
It is. It's the
right?
It's a good way to look at it.
It is. It's the first stop of the farewell tour.
Like the Elton John farewell tour.
And
goodbye.
And
parting gifts when they show up at some of these stadiums and they have to play them?
I also want to give Michelle Garner a lot of credit for kind of inspiring this. She's the beat writer who covers ASU for AZ Central. She sent out a tweet about it yesterday and then wrote today on their website, "This could be the last meeting between ASU and USC football. Does anyone care?" question mark.
I don't care that much. Okay. I mean, you bringing this up, and you get like this brings back some really great memories. One game, ASU beats Lane Kiffin and USC 43-22. Vontaze Burfict. I remember this. This is 2011. They were all calling Vontaze Burfict this dirty player because he was.
He was.
He was a dirty player. Yeah. But I remember that game. Brock Osweiler beat them. And then a year later was the Taylor Kelly game, 612 yards of offense. And the next time was Berkovici beating them with the Jail Mary. And then in 2018, Nikhil Harry with a punt return for a touchdown as they wanted the Coliseum in Herm's first year. Like, there's some good memories. But, no, I think more than anything, I'm looking forward to the new rivalries that will start up. In the grand scheme of things, ASU did not have enough success in the Pac-12 to warrant us missing anybody in this conference, and I truly believe that. That's my opinion. Okay. There was not enough success by ASU to really miss anybody. What am I missing? What am I missing? Going to the freaking bowl game in Hawaii every year when you went when you won six games, and you went 6-5
every other year, right?
So yeah. I'm looking forward to new rivalries and establishing something different because in the grand scheme of things, this did not work.
Yeah,
ASU in this conference did not work. They did not have any level of success that you should where they would make you miss that they're not in it anymore.
Well, they did win the Rose Bowl.
That was like that was in 97. That was a Pac-10 then.
And I know, but I mean, for me, I guess I've been here long enough. I remember that like it was yesterday. I was there. I was about 30 yards away from David Boston when he caught the pass.
So that was 26 years ago.
Yeah, no, I it was a long time ago. I would imagine a lot of people listening to us don't have the level of connection to that moment that I do. I was blessed to be there, and it's still to this day the most fun I've ever had covering a season ever here in the Valley, and that includes the 2001 World Series team. That team was a blast to cover and a blast to watch. I'll tell you this, 90% of what you just said, I agree with. And I'm looking forward to new. And I'm hoping that going to a conference that takes their football as seriously as the Big 12 does will mandate ASU takes it a little more seriously than they do. I don't know if that's going to happen, but I hope that going to the football crazy Big 12 helps inject a little bit of life into how they take football. But I will say this. I will miss USC, and the reason why, it was always cool beating them. It really was. It was always...
Yeah, who's it going to be cool beating in the Big 12?
I don't know. You know what?
Is there somebody that's like, okay, it's cool to beat them?
TCU? I mean... Utah, Colorado, Arizona, the teams Colorado. That you're taking with you. Right, like
Colorado.
You know what I mean?
It'd be cool to beat Colorado. Like wait a second. You beat them like a drum every year they've been here.
Right, with Deion now, that might change drastically. But you know what? Like, but I agree with you about that. It was time to move on.
It was time. There's nothing to miss.
ASU needed to survive, and this is what survival looks like. But I will tell you, there was nothing quite as sweet if you were an ASU fan other than U of A. Than beating USC.
Yeah.
I remember, look, we've been doing this show together, you and I, for 12 years. And I remember just about every single time of those five wins that they've had since 2011, ASU over USC was one of our top stories on a Football Monday. I remember it like it was, oh, we've got to talk about this. ASU just beat USC. That's a big deal. It was always a big deal.
But where did those seasons end up?
It did, but it...
In the end, right?
See, that's
part of it.
It's part of it.
It is part of it.
But it's not a big part of it to me.
You're just happy with that one win.
It's just because USC was... And look, let's be honest. These last 10 years, they were some dark, lean years for USC. That was Clay Helton. That was Lane Kiffin. That was Sark. Go back the previous 10 years. Cutter never beat him. Erickson mostly never beat him. Snyder couldn't beat him in his last year. You know, so they went 10 years where they couldn't beat USC in the 2000s. They couldn't do it. I won't miss Washington State. I won't miss Stanford. I won't miss Cal. I'll miss USC because beating USC on a Saturday was kind of cool. That was kind of cool when you were able to do that.
That always had some special stuff. Not here to take that away from you at all. I'm not going to miss a conference that gave you very little joy over the last 26 years.
Kyler Murray says he's close. In fact, he said specifically soon. Do the Cardinals think he'll be back soon? Plus, somebody finally has some sense about the 0-2 teams. We'll tell you who said what next on Burns and Gambo.
Hey, it's
Wolf. With so many injury questions surrounding the Arizona Cardinals, are we getting closer to an answer on Kyler Murray? We get going tomorrow at 10 a.m. It's Wolf and Luke on Arizona Sports.
All right, just circling back to what's become our top story of the day. And honestly, we've got co-top stories of the day today because we don't want to make too much out of a Kyler Murray TikTok video in which he said soon. The Diamondbacks won a big game today, and the Diamondbacks won a big series today, and Corbin Carroll had a big moment today. So we got like co-top stories. But the one that certainly has intrigued a lot of people is Kyler Murray's TikTok video in which he's seen doing some squats with like goblet squats with a 75-pound dumbbell. And then when the video is done, there's just one word that shows up on the screen. It just says soon. There were other words, too, in which he talked about the rehab and coming back and how grateful he is for people sticking with him. But the one word that captured everybody's attention was just simply soon.
Yeah. So it's not like saying I'm back.
No, yeah, no.
Okay, it's not saying I'm back.
But this is not like, the Michael Jordan facts, right, back in the day.
Don't think you put out soon if you're 6 weeks away. That doesn't seem so soon to me.
No, but Ruby does bring up a good point, and I don't know the answer to the question. He might think he's soon. He was also the same guy who didn't want to go on the PUP list that when they put him on. Like the athlete will always have a more highly accelerated vision of when he thinks he should come back versus everybody else who's involved in that decision. It's not just his decision, right? It's Monty's decision,
it's the medical team's decision. They got to clear him.
It ain't just Kyler. So Kyler might think he's soon, but they're gonna want him back on the field, but they're also gonna want to be careful about it and make sure that he truly is good to go. Right?
What I said to you is, what I read into that video is he's doing squats. All right, he's not doing pull-ups. He's not doing push-ups. He's not bench pressing. He's not doing bicep curls. He's not doing dips. He's doing squats. My knee's good. Look at me.
Look at me.
Look at my knee. Eight months ago, ACL surgery. Look at me now doing these squats. So I think there was a message in what he was doing, and that was to say, my knee's sound.
Mm-hmm.
My knee's sound.
I don't disagree with that at all.
I think that was calculated there. It's that workout. Not all the workouts you could do, he's showing the knee.
And certainly, I think it's going to be sooner than I expected. I just don't know if it's going to be week five, which would be the first week that it's allowed.
No, because I think you got to get a ramp-up time for practice as well. I think there's got to be a certain amount of time that Kyler's got to get practices under his belt before they feel comfortable, because it's a new offense, and you could sit there and learn about it all day in film, but you got to go out there and practice with the guys and get your rhythm going, too. I mean, they don't want to set him up to fail. And what I mean, hey, listen, he's back. You haven't practiced with this team, but just get in there and throw the ball, and he has four interceptions in the first game. They got to set him up to succeed, not to fail.
Yeah, and when that is, we'll see. But certainly when he comes back, in my opinion, you might disagree with this, I think we have to recalibrate our expectations for the Cardinals a little bit, because I don't think, and this is a perfect segue into kind of what we were going to talk about here, I don't think the Cardinals are as bad as we thought. I don't think they're as bad as some of the other teams in the NFL are. And I think when Kyler comes back, they might win a game or two or three that maybe they weren't supposed to, or we wouldn't have expected them to, because this team is more competitive than I think a lot of us thought.
Let me ask you something.
Yeah.
They were competitive in two games against Washington and the Giants. What if they get waxed by 30 to the Cowboys? Do you still feel the same way?
These next two games and maybe these next three games are going to be a terrible barometer, I think, for the Cardinals and their competitiveness, because these are really good teams they're playing these next 2 weeks.
I could look at eight games probably and say those are games that could go either way. I could look at the Rams games, maybe even the Seattle games, and say there's a chance they can win those games. I could definitely look at the Texans game. I could look at the Bears game. The Falcons are 2-0. I don't know. Like, I don't know how to look at them yet. I need more time. But for sure, like the Bears may be the worst team in the league, okay? The Bears may be the worst team in the league.
Did you see Justin Fields today, by the way?
Well, today he kind of walked it back today. Like, today he walked it back.
Yeah, well, the comments I read, he basically was blaming the coaches for making him look robotic, for giving him too much to think about when he's out there, and he's too busy thinking and not playing football. And he basically said, when I play this week, I'm going to go out there and not give a bleep and just play.
See, here's what he said. I wanted to clear something up from the press conference earlier. So this is him. This is him after
what he said today. Yeah. Okay, yeah, I didn't see the update, so please hit me with this.
Yeah, so I just wanted to clear something up from the press conference earlier. I forgot who asked the question, but I kind of knew that's what they were trying to get out of me. But yeah, I said, I think I saw a quote that just showed me on Twitter. I don't have Twitter because I don't need it, but it was a quote that said, it could be coaching, and I love you guys, but I get that you guys' jobs would get clicked. So it's like, when you take my quote out of context, when you just say that, if you paint the picture on the inside out, you're trying to split us up as a team. I'm not blaming anything on the coaches. I'm never going to blame anything on the coaches, never going to blame anything on my teammates. Whatever happens in the game, I will take the blame. I don't care if it's a drop pass. It should have been a pass. Put it on me, but never will you hear anything come out of my mouth where I will blame it on somebody else in this organization, my teammates. Never will you hear that. I just wanted to clear that
up. Yeah, somebody got to him.
Because what he said was, quote, you know, could be coaching, I think. At the end of the day, they're doing their job when they're giving me what to look at. But at the end of the day, I can't be thinking about that when the game comes. I prepare myself throughout the week. And when the game comes, it's time to play free at that point, thinking less and playing more. My goal this week is just to say, F it and go out there and play football how I know how to play football. That includes thinking less and just going out there and playing off instincts rather than so much, say, info in my head, data in my head, close quote.
Well, and then the defensive coordinator resigned.
Yeah.
Alan Williams.
There were
today.
Some reports that the police had raided Hallis Hall. Now, those were since denied or shot down. But there's some reports that the police actually showed up for something.
Wow.
At Hallis Hall.
They're a freak. Like, they're a mess. They're a mess. They may not win a game.
It's got
like,
a little. Doesn't it have a little Cardinals feel from last year? Coaches resigning.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I guess it does.
A little messy, right? Last year was a mess. Anyway, back to the Cardinals. Bill Barnwell over at ESPN.com.
Yeah.
He ranked the 0-2 teams. He had the Cardinals as the second worst 0-2 team. He had the Texans as the worst 0-2 team.
He had the Texans as the worst one. Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, I think, because I do think that these teams, are, especially the Cardinals, are better than some teams. But he brought up a couple interesting points. I wanted to bring these up on the Cardinals. He goes, the short throws have led to an almost comical level of volume for tight end Zach Ertz, who has 18 targets through two games. We've noticed this and talked about it. He goes, Ertz has more targets than A.J. Brown, Jamar Chase, or Amon-Ra St. Brown through 2 weeks, which is a lot for a 32-year-old tight end coming off a serious knee injury. It's a big topic. We've talked about that. They keep throwing the ball, check down Ertz. You know what I mean? Call him Zach. Another thing he says, after a decade of blitzing at some of the highest rates in football, the Cardinals have sent extra pressure on just 7.2% of opposing dropbacks through 2 weeks, the league's lowest rate.
That doesn't surprise me. I have noticed that in the first two games. Vance was blitz mania, right? Like blitzkrieg all the time, every day, every game. It has been a noticeable drop off from a year ago. Noticeable. The reason he put the Texans last and said they are the worst among all the 0-2 teams. First of all, he brought up all the injuries, the starting safeties, both offensive tackles, starting center, one of their two starting guards. They lost another safety during the game, but mostly they're pointing to
sacks
and how much abuse CJ Stroud. He's already taken 11 sacks in 2 weeks. That is the third most suffered by a quarterback since the turn of the century. David Carr infamously is number one on that list. He's already playing through a shoulder injury. It's the Texans right now were number one on his team among the worst teams in the NFL, the worst team in the NFL who started 0-2. So I think there's a little bit of an eye test thing here with the Cardinals, but I think there's also data like this that suggests maybe the Cardinals aren't the worst team in the NFL and that Kyler might be able to help that when he comes back. When we come back, America's team or America's tease? Now that's a tease. Next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Hey, it's Vince Murata coming up on Thursday's show. We'll start to take a closer look at the opposition. America's team, the Dallas Cowboys, coming to town this weekend. Starting at 6 here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
They're going to have that moniker forever, aren't they? Whether they deserve it or not, it doesn't really matter. That's irrelevant.
What's the history of it? I couldn't try to find out. America's team. When were the Cowboys named America's team? You can talk. I'm going to look it up.
Oh.
Because I don't know.
I don't know.
They were America's team in the 70s.
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. The
1978.
Okay.
The nickname America's team was actually first coined in 1978 in a Dallas Cowboys highlight film by narrator...
Oh, John Facenda?
John Facenda, who mentioned that the team appears on TV so much that they are recognizable as movie stars and U.S. presidents. Thus, they are America's team.
Okay, honestly, and this is going to, for our younger audience out there who doesn't remember this, but that makes sense. They were on TV all the time.
All the time.
All the time. Yeah. And in an era when you didn't have Sunday Ticket, you couldn't watch whatever you wanted, there weren't highlights galore, you were kind of force-fed whatever games the networks decided they were going to show you based off of where you lived. I mean, especially here. I don't know where it was like everywhere else. Growing up here in Phoenix in the 70s, the way I did, Cowboys were on every damn Sunday because we had no team. We had no team, and they were Texas, Arizona, Southwest, et cetera, right? Like, so we got a ton of Dallas Cowboy games. We got a ton of Denver Bronco games, but they were on net. Roger Staubach and Tony Dorsett. Drew Pierce, they were so popular. All right, that makes sense. I can see that. And the moniker stuck, and it still sticks. And they don't deserve it. I mean, they're not America's team anymore. They're still insanely popular. There's a reason why they're on prime time all the time. But I like the kind of the wordplay with one national writer for the USA Today, in which he wondered if the Dallas Cowboys, instead of being America's team, were going to be America's tease. Because the Dallas Cowboys have, in essence, teased America for the better part of the last 25 years.
Well,
they haven't won a Super Bowl in almost 30 years
96.
Now. I was there. With
96.
I was in the building at Sun Devil Stadium when they won that Super Bowl 30. It's been that long.
Why the hell did they put a Super Bowl in that stadium?
It was, oh man, it's a long.
Like, usually you have to get a new stadium and then they give you something.
Usually. And, right? And that was,
hey,
also,
get a new stadium, we'll give you a Super Bowl. Not, hey, let's put you in the bleachers at Sun Devil Stadium.
We were supposed to have one, then the controversy over the MLK holiday. This is a story that goes back more than 30 years. You got to go way back.
Odd that they would give them Super Bowl.
I mean, Phoenix in January, February, it's one of the best places in America to be. So it was always seen as a good place to have a game. But yeah, the stadium. I mean, I'll never forget the auxiliary press box. I was like on the top row of Sun Devil Stadium watching that game. But that's the Cowboys' last Super Bowl. But ever since then, it has been a tease. They've been a tease. They've every single year, it's this team that you think is going to be good enough to compete for one, and they always do something to keep themselves from me. And this year, and the columnist was making, was the thing about this year's team that could make them the tease is Dak and is their offense. And the questions of how good are they really based off of two games in which their red zone failures have been pronounced. And
and
in particular, this last week against the Jets, it was really, really bad, which is why I suspect that the Dallas Cowboys, not that they're going to run it up on the Cardinals, but I imagine they're going to try to score a lot of points to answer, because I think they're putting up with a lot of that crap this week, right?
They are. So they're going to want to have a lot more red zone success. You know, we'll see, because they did really struggle. They struggled in the red zone. Their kicker is kicking a lot of field goals. He had a 55-yarder, but in the red zone, they've had to kick some. I kind of look at the Cowboys, and I was just looking at Tony Romo, because I remember Tony Romo's got two playoff wins. That guy was the quarterback from 2005 to 2016. Like 12 years of being the Cowboys quarterback, and they had like two wins in the playoffs. So they've had their struggles of having success, especially in the playoffs, since that 96 season.
Dak's got, what, two playoff wins in his career, I think? Romo's got two playoff wins in his playoff career. I mean, there hasn't been
a lot of success.
No, there's been regular season success. They've won double-digit games plenty of times, but postseason success? No.
No, and you think, like, the Giants won a couple of Super Bowls after the Dallas Cowboys did. The Eagles won a Super Bowl after they did. I don't think Washington did. But since from that time on, from 96 on, like, there's been other teams in the division that have had success.
Now, maybe this team is different this year. Their defense is fierce. Micah Parsons, there's Adam Schein today, NFL.com, wrote a column and just kind of taking a look around the league. And one of the things he wrote about was his opinion that Micah Parsons is the best player in the NFL right now.
And he is. He's playing at a Lawrence Taylor-like effort level where, again, two games in. He's got to play at that level all year long in order to get MVP consideration. Like, he really does. He's got to play at that level all year. He's got to break sack records, and he's got to do to get an MVP as a defensive player, which Lawrence Taylor did, the last player to do it in like 86. You've got to play at that level. Two games is not, you got to play at that level all year long to beat out offensive players.
Yeah. I mean, there was a conversation yesterday on Good Morning Football about whether he could win the MVP. And we talked about this a little bit yesterday. And the idea was that as a defensive player,
it's so hard.
You have to put up eye-popping numbers, like unbelievable crazy.
And break records.
You have to do stuff on national TV. You have to have like a pick six return. You have to have, you know, you just have to like constantly showcase yourself just to make up for the fact that the numbers deficit you have with the offensive players, it's very hard to overcome.
All right, Mitch, turn this around really quickly. You ready to hear it?
Yeah, sure.
All right,
here you go. Sum total of their stars make up a galaxy. Their record is envied, and their innovations copied down to the last glamorous detail. They appear on television so often that their faces are as familiar to the public as presidents and movie stars. They are the Dallas Cowboys, America's team.
I love that.
How great was that?
That's great. Good there job, you, go. You two. Good job, you two.
I found
that
it.
Voice
I
is something else.
Oh, my God. Is that the best?
That voice is straight butter.
It is.
It's just like, oh.
When he tells you what the autumn wind is, you just know.
John Facenda.
You too.
Yeah, Mitch, I found it, and so I sent it to Mitch. He turned it around really quickly. That is when they got termed America's team. It was John Facenda in that highlight film in what was that, 78, Mitch?
78, I think that's what you
78,
said.
78, they coined him America's team. Yeah. That was it, right there.
Yeah, well.
And it's lasted ever since.
This might be their best chance to win a Super Bowl since they won the last one.
Oh, you want to go there after two games?
That would require me to look back at all of the teams that have tried and failed with Dallas.
They played the Jets without Rodgers, and the Giants were a train wreck when they played them.
That defense is really good.
They haven't played anybody.
I know. That defense is really, really good. I don't know if their offense is good enough. I really don't. And I tell you this right now, Tony Pollard setting records for how much he's touching the ball. Boy, they better figure out something else. Like, I think that's a...
They'll wear him down in a hurry, giving him 25 carries a game.
You're going to wear him down. You better figure out something. And Dak, I just don't trust him. I wouldn't trust him. I wouldn't trust him if I were a Dallas Cowboy fan. Just don't trust him.
I say, I get it. I get it.
You know?
I did want to mention this on football.
Sure.
Chandler Jones has been placed on the non-football injury illness list. Like...
There's a lot to be worried about.
There's something going on there. Yeah. He's not right in the head. And you can just see from all his messages and everything that something's really wrong.
All right, so listen, tomorrow and Friday at 7:20 a.m., 12:20 p.m., 5:20 p.m. during Burns and Gambo, we're giving you the chance to win tickets to see the Cardinals take on the Cowboys. Be caller number 10 when you hear your cue to call in, and you could score two tickets to the big game. The Arizona Diamondbacks steamrolling their way to the postseason, or are they? Talk about that coming up here on Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Arizona Sports, the local sports leader.
Burns and Gambo, what's on tonight?
All right, locally, nothing. Diamondbacks have already played, so that's not on. They won 7-1. We're going to talk about that here in a minute. But if you're scoreboard watching, there's plenty to watch tonight. For the Diamondbacks in their playoff push, top of the seventh, the Mets are beating the Marlins 4-2.
Ooh.
Game's on FS1. You could watch if you wanted to. Then there's, middle of the fourth. Pirates are beating the Cubbies 7-1.
7-1?
Uh-huh.
Yes, sir.
7-1.
Wow.
Dang. And then already a final. Twins are beating the Twins beat, past tense, the Reds 5-3.
Okay, good news.
Good news.
Oh my God, we might have playoff baseball for the D-backs. I don't want to get my hopes up, but man, that make me very happy.
Yeah, look, you said
that make me very happy.
You said it well earlier, and it's absolutely true. This has been a roller coaster ride for the Diamondbacks all season long. I mean, really, honestly, since like the end of June, or maybe the end of July, right, where they had such a terrible August, and you thought they're done, they're toast, they're falling apart, and then they rallied, and then ever since then, it's been You know, you take three of four. I'm just looking at it now. You take two straight against Texas, take three of four against Cincinnati. You're seven games above 500. You feel great. Then you get swept by the Dodgers. You drop two out of three out of Baltimore. You feel terrible. Then you win three out of four against the Cubs. You feel great. Then you lose three out of four to the Mets. You feel terrible. Now, they've responded with a five-game win streak after losing three or four to the New York. It's been the whole time,
yeah.
Right?
Can they finish this off and play them? Listen, it was something I was reading a story. I said Lovello said, "Look, give me your best 14 games when there are like 14 games left. Give me everything you got." And right now, you emptied the tank out. Everybody gives you everything you have, and you hope that it's enough because you can see that light at the end of the tunnel. Now you can see the light at the end of the tunnel. The season's over, you know, and in 10 days.
Yeah.
Right? 10 days, the season's over. So, you know, you got to give you everything you have. You're in a good spot right now. You've created a little bit of a cushion on some of these teams, but there's a lot of work left to be done. You go to Yankee Stadium, you got no Gallon of Kelly pitching. You got Fott, Davies, and Nelson.
Well, can I add something on that real quick?
Please do.
Torey Lovello, after the game today, confirmed that Brandon Fott will pitch game one. He didn't announce starters for Saturday and Sunday. Now, he can't start, and I'm trying to do the off days in my head. I think you could start. Yeah, here's Theo Mackey from AZ Central on Twitter. Brandon Fott will start Friday against the Yankees. No word yet on Saturday and Sunday. Gallon could pitch Sunday if the Diamondbacks skip Davies or Nelson.
Okay, Sunday would be... That would be his regular rest.
Wednesday,
Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Pitch. Wednesday, yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So that could be his regular rest. But I don't know. This is tough. This is tough sledding now because you feel like his arm could use an extra day's off.
Oh, yeah.
You almost feel like this is a catch-22. You want Gallon to pitch, but he really might need the extra day might come in really beneficial for him.
No doubt.
Because every fifth day right now, he's not pitching very well.
No, he's not.
So if you could give him one extra day, could that be a factor? For a lot of pitchers, it is. For a lot of starting pitchers, that one extra day's rest, they're stronger. They just feel stronger. A little bit more juice. So that's a tough thing for them to navigate. I'll try to find out what they're going to do, but that is interesting.
Yeah, it's just, he just wouldn't say yet on what he's going to do Saturday and Sunday. I think just giving himself the option to throw Gallon if he wanted to. But yeah, you're right. It's now today they cruise to a 7-1 win. Three hits from Gabriel Moreno. Christian Walker had a big day. Ketel Marte had a big home run. Obviously, the two stars of the day, if you will, were Merrill Kelly and Corbin Carroll.
Yes.
Merrill Kelly, six and two-thirds innings. He was really good again. Cramps were not an issue at home. That was awesome to see. That was not a storyline or an angle today at all. But obviously, the star of the day is Corbin Carroll, who had three hits. He had a home run, stolen base number 50. He becomes just the ninth player in the history of baseball to have a 25 home run, 50 stolen base season. He's the first rookie to ever do it, and only the second player in the history of the game to do it during his age 22 season. He's gonna run away with the Rookie of the Year award, the National League. Nobody else is even close, but more than anything, it's nice to see some of that pop come back in his bat a little bit, because it's been a little bit of a dry spell with that for Corbin these last few weeks or so.
Yeah, I am amazed when you look at his body type that he's a 25 home run guy, that he might be able to hit 30. Like, it's incredible. The thing that still fascinates me is that they got that $111 million contract done for him, and that he's under contract until 2032. You don't have to worry about anything till then. Now you worry about it a year or 2 years beforehand if he's playing really well. But you might have something so special here. He might end up being the best homegrown player the Diamondbacks have ever had. And there's been some good ones, right? Paul Goldschmidt was one. A lot of the key players, when you look at, you know, the team that won the World Series, they were all guys that they brought in from different teams. You know, Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling, Steve Finley, Luis Gonzalez, Matt Williams. And they were the baby backs, that baby backs era. There were some good players. But, you know, for the most part, this kid has a chance to be, I think, the most special out of all the homegrown talent they've ever had.
Brandon Webb was the best.
Brandon Webb was the best
homegrown player for the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, Brandon Webb and Paul Goldschmidt, I think, were the two.
Oh, Goldie. I forgot about Goldie.
Yeah, those two.
Goldie and Webby would be the best two homegrown players. I think you're right. I think he's got, I mean, look, he's go back and look at Mike Trout. Now, I'm not saying Corbin Carroll's going to be Mike Trout, But go back and look at Mike Trout's rookie year, right? And it's like similar kind of themes and similar kind of things that Corbin Carroll is doing. The power thing is extraordinary that somebody...
Yeah, Mike Trout's been in a baseball forever. He can't get to the playoffs. Corbin Carroll's first year, he may go. There's your difference.
He might.
Hey, Mike.
It would be, hey, look, if we come in here tomorrow and the Marlins have lost to the Mets and the Cubs have lost to the Pirates and what the Reds are... And again, it's not going to mean that it's over. But just start to give yourself a little bit of cushion, right? A little bit of wiggle room. The Yankee Stadium thing, I'm not going to lie to you, it makes me a little nervous. The Yankees aren't good this year, but they're not bad.
They're still playing to win baseball.
They're not an awful baseball team. No. They're just not as good as everybody thought they were going to be. No, that series makes me a little nervous, especially when you're throwing your aces.
I mean, it should, because again, you know, as happy as you are right now, if they lose three games in a row, you'll be down and it'll be a tight race again.
The standings, here's the very latest, accounting for everything that's already gone to a final today. Phillies still have the number one spot in the wild card race. Diamondbacks have the number two spot. The Cubs right now have the number three spot. The Marlins are a half game back of the Cubs for the final spot. The Reds are a game and a half back from the Cubs for the final wild card spot. So, but if you look at the loss column, Diamondbacks are three games ahead of the Reds. They're a game ahead of the Marlins, and they're tied with the Cubs, but they got a two-game lead in the win column over Chicago. It's going to do it for us. We're out of here. We'll see you tomorrow straight up 2 o'clock right here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Have a great night, everyone.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.